Everyone, and welcome to episode 65 of season 11 of Movie Around Minute, the Daily Podcast, where we curry our way through the 2001 award-winning HBO miniseries Band of Brothers, 5 minutes at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again today to finish off his three-episode stint is Lee Colley, a movie buff and actor, and not to be confused with the movie trivia expert.
No, I don't think anyone's ever going to be, have a misinterpretation that I'm that person.
Lee, this is all for fun, and I hope that you take it, in a good way. Just the fun of talking about movie trivia.
Honestly, it's been a joy. I've loved every minute of it, and I have to say, I think it's been a real kind of like an enlightening experience for me, for someone who I really did pride myself. And whenever we have any kind of quiz sort of games or sort of with friends or family, I'm normally like, I'm the one that people want to go with. They're like, how do you know that? It's really obscure. But what has clearly been shown, it's a very shallow waters that I dip in. So yeah, all good.
No, Lee, I'm that makes me feel terrible, because the point is not to, I want you to not lose confidence in your trivia ability. Your World War II movie trivia ability is not in the expert level, but that's fine. I don't want you next time that you're at a trivia night or something like that, and someone say, "Oh, we want you to be in Jimmy," like, "I don't want to be there. I'm not good at this anymore." No, that's not true. You're good. It's just, we all have our niche of useless information that clusters in our heads and that we use, and that's what all it comes down to. Nothing. It doesn't say something about Lee Colley. Okay, it just says that okay, World War II movies is not necessarily your field of expertise. And trust me, there are so many people out there that are like that. So you're good. Don't use this unless you want to. Don't use this as a reason to stop doing,
use it trivia. Stop the endless quizzes that go on in my life. I mean, it's the perfect now. I have the perfect kind of like alibi, if you will. No, honestly, anyone that knows me will tell you that it would take a lot more to shake the confidence I have in my quizzing ability.
I'm so happy to hear that. That's very important. It's definitely very important.
Others would not be so happy to hear that, but yeah, there we go.
Well, all the people that are losing, so that's fine.
Exactly. Quite.
I understand that. Hmm. All right, so... Episode 65 begins with Babe continuing to be in shock and ends with the end titles of the entrance to Bastogne. So we ended things yesterday with Babe getting a huge shock. He's standing there by the truck taking a cigarette, and he looks over and sees a wounded guy walk by, and then he looks down and sees coming at them. From further down the road are hundreds, if not thousands, of men who just look like zombies, just the way that they're walking through. And, he's completely shocked and doesn't know what to do. He like throws away his cigarette. And it's funny because he like throws it in a strange way. He doesn't even throw it. You can see that he's still in shock as he's tossing the cigarette. It's nice that they do it that way. And then he goes to the other side of the truck and goes, "Hey, Bill, Don, come here, look at this." And both Malarkey and Garnier are taking leaks on the side, and Garnier goes, "What? Hold on, Jesus." He goes, "I'm done." And and then the two of them show up to try and figure out what it is that that Babe is looking at, and we see a whole bunch of other guys also looking at it. And you see a bunch of soldiers just walking down walking in the opposite direction away from Bastogne. They're all just looking at them. And then Malarkey goes, "What the hell is going on?" And Garnier goes, "Hey, You're going the wrong way. You know, these guys literally look like zombies the way that they're walking by. And then Garnier walks over to one of the guys and he goes, Hey pal, what happened? Where the hell are you going? And wait a second, that actor looks really, really familiar. Do you know who that is?
You know, I have a very good idea who it is. Yeah, it is indeed me, Rob. I am that actor that you.
Now we can let the secret out that we know that Lee Colley is a character in this miniseries. But here he is, you know.
Yeah.
And now everyone can know that's the reason why. That's how he got to Lee, because you know, Lee is friends with Jay, and Jay mentioned that he knew that Lee was in this has a small part here, and so, you know, that's how I made my connection to Lee, and I'm very grateful for it, because you know, I love talking to Lee.
Oh yeah, well, I mean, what will be clearly evident now when they go back retrospectively and look at the episodes, I go, well, he clearly didn't get him on for his World War II knowledge, and it's fair to say he was educated by what was happening in the episode more than he was contributing. So hopefully now all kind of comes together and you go, yes, I was very much a small part of the episode. I have obviously watched it as a viewer and adored it like everyone else. But yeah, no, it was an amazing experience. It was so beautifully realized. I mean, as you can see what's on camera is, that was all dressed. Like, they dressed the set so well, and that was in Hatfield, in a disused airbase in outside of London, where they filmed a lot of the Bond movies. Mm-hmm. And when I kind of rocked up to set to do my actual filming, and I actually went up earlier actually to have a chat with the director, and Damien was there, and Del Dye was there. They were going through the scene where Sink arrives in the Jeep. So I watched that being rehearsed like two or three times and stuff. And then we were having a chat about other things and stuff. And then I was kind of seeing how they were kind of spraying the artificial snow, and it was just incredible. Like, this set was just, it just didn't look like a set. It just looked like you were in Belgium. It was in Bastogne. It was just so, so like detailed and specific, and and I think what in turn, although it was such a small role, it, you know, I would say the way that I was kind of allowed to kind of immerse myself in that moment was so generous that actually it all just felt so hauntingly kind of real, really. So yeah, I'm very, very privileged to be a part of what is one of the greatest, if not the greatest, TV series of all time. And yeah, just to have a small contribution in it is something that, you know, will always live long with me, I would say. Oh, wow,
that's really cool. Now, I mean, let's back up slightly. How did you get the part? Do you remember?
Yeah, so basically I did a play where I played a lead role, and I got approached by an agent, and the agent basically took me on. And one of the things that they did, so this is going back prior to people like really using the internet, and there might have been some dial-up, I'm not sure there was, but certainly everything was paper form. So I basically got like a breakdown of all the things that they were submitting me for, and right front and center was Band of Brothers. And I think they've been casting this now for maybe a couple of months, so people were starting to be put in place or getting down to the latter part of the casting process. And I remember, because now if you live in England, there's a thing, doesn't exist anymore, maybe it does, but I don't think it does, our information highway was teletext, which was means of basically tapping on a remote control and you could basically see all the latest news. This is particularly prevalent for people that are football fans. It would come up with like transfer news and such like, but anyway, you'd also get like movie news or TV news, and there was constant like refreshing information on this Band of Brothers TV series being filmed in England. And then basically I got a general with the British casting director Gary Davey, And I, if I remember rightly, the first, because I had several meetings for Band of Brothers, for different parts, some more substantial than others. One very substantial. If you ask me who they were, I genuinely can't remember because I must have had, I don't know, six to eight
Oh,
auditions for Band of
wow.
Brothers, I think. Yeah, and I got very close to a couple of different roles, and for one reason or other, they didn't go for me.
I hope it wasn't because you're World War
But
II movie
I'll.
trivia.
Yeah, that was it. That's what they went. Nice, nah, kind of him. He doesn't know what he's talking about. And then I was doing a workshop for another play, and I think I'd been. Oh, that's right. I had a meeting for quite a substantial character again. I can't remember which one it was because there were two or three. And I had a meeting with Meg Liberman, the American casting director. She came over and we ran through some scenes and what have you. And then I got a call back, another call back, I think. And then, yeah, and then I didn't hear anything. And I went away and did, I was doing a workshop for a play for about 3 weeks, I think. Well, maybe a month it was, I think. And then I got a call out of the blue from my agent and say, look, that role hasn't gone for you, but they really like you. They're going to give you something. And then I can't remember exactly what I was doing. And then I just got a phone call saying, look, they want you to be a part of this series. Obviously, though, you got very close, and for whatever reason, they've gone with someone else. It hasn't gone for you. But there's something in it for you. They're going to send you the script. And basically, and even at that point, I don't think I even knew the part. I'm pretty sure I didn't. And then the script came through, and it was, yeah, this role. And it was just like, and I remember the caveat was, but you're going to be directed by Tom Hanks. So, this is going to be like a really great experience, what have you. So I remember, I think maybe a week that I was booked. And I remember doing like a very, very lukewarm boot camp of sorts where we fired a rifle, we did some kind of drills. And that was with Dale Dye's sort of second in command. But again, the name escapes
Could it
me
be
what his
Freddie
name
Joe?
was.
Could it be
And
Freddie Joe Farnsworth? Okay.
could have been. And he basically treated us like we were soldiers, which was particularly funny because I remember there were about four of us. I think it was quite an intense couple of days. And one of the guys was a slightly older actor who, it's fair to say, didn't take too kindly to what was basically expected of the immersive experience of it all. But I loved it. I was like a sponge for it. I was like, whatever I can do to kind of make this authentic. And knowing that I had the thing when you play such a small role, it's such a cliche, but you don't want to act. You don't want to be the person to go, oh my God, what's that guy doing? Or, he said, and he's delivering his lines like they're the most sort of important, the most sort of you're not telling the story, basically. You're making it an indulgent thing, or you're coming in the wrong energy, or whatever it might be. So it's a skill within itself to be like what they call a day player, I suppose. And then I remember again, so I was going back at this a couple of days ago, and I remember that I had a session with Jill McCulloch, who was the casting director, who is no longer with us, sadly. But so basically, I remember going up to set on the second day, I think, and I arrived. I had my trailer, and then I went to go and have my session with Jill McCulloch, just going through the scene. And if I, she didn't give me many pointers. I remember she was really lovely. She was just there. I'm going to be there on set. If you need anything, she was like there to hold your hand if you needed it. And then I remember I then went. I was told, do you want to come and watch some of the filming? I was like, yeah, please. So I watched the scene in the cinema room where basically Buck and Winters are having that little exchange. And I must have seen that, I don't know, however many takes. they took, and where the guy comes in prior to that to basically announce that their leave is over and they're basically is cancelled, they got to go. So I remember that, and again, just for me at that point, it was the largest scale production I'd been on. So it was like it was a movie set for me rather than a TV series. It really made me realize the scale difference and the investment that was, you know, look at the people that were behind it. It's obviously going to be something much more epic than as what has largely gone before. And HBO gives such autonomy to the makers of shows that you're making mini movies, essentially. And then I remember I then got driven again, upset to talk to. I remember saying, you're going to go and talk to Tom. And I think at that point, you just, because I'm sort of immersing myself in other things, it hadn't really dawned on me that I was going to go and talk to Tom Hanks. And then I got driven up in the Jeep and Damian Lewis was there. And I remember it was Tom Hanks' birthday, I think. So someone had given him some videos of a TV show called The Fast Show, because The Fast Show is like this sketch. And honestly, these things sort of become really vivid in my mind. And I thought, what an interesting present to buy him. And apparently from Johnny Depp, because Johnny Depp was a fan of it as well, that there was some kind of correlation there, or was that effect. And then he mentioned, so he was like saying, hey, what do you want to do with it? It was really kind of open to what I would like to do with it. And I was like, kind of had what was on the page, really. I just, you know, thought I would like to be kind of just play it in a way that is someone that has been so traumatized and haunted that, you know, is a little bit kind of like doesn't really know what's going on. And then when sort of there is that kind of exchange of like, you got any ammo, give, you know, yeah, take this. I think it was just about just want to play it as truthfully as I can, really. And he really, for such a small role, to give me that sort of time and to make me feel so part of it was just something I'll never forget, really. And then to kind of top that, so we were filmed, it was a night shoot, I remember, and I don't know, did like a couple of takes, I think. I don't remember it being extensive. But I do remember getting called up several times and they weren't quite ready. They were doing pickups of something. But I remember, this is the thing that really stuck with me, was I remember Tom saying, I've got a friend coming over, he's doing like a little cameo. Anyway, where my trailer was, this guy was playing the guitar and I was sort of sat down having a tea, I think. And he was like, hey, man, come join. And it was Jimmy Fallon. But I didn't know who Jimmy Fallon was at the point. And we were just riffing. We're just like singing and, you know, he's just such a really amenable guy. And I didn't know who this guy was. Someone said he was a stand-up comedian. And he was like, yeah, you know, I've been just brought in to do this. And I'm a friend of Tom and da da da. And then, yeah. And I remember, I don't know, sometime later, I went, oh, that's that guy. Because I generally didn't know. I just thought, this guy's just a really, you know, welcoming, fun guy. And yeah, that whole experience. And I don't know whether that was kind of cultivated within, like they wanted you to feel like a band of brothers, no matter what, kind of how great your role was. But I did really, really, really feel that. And I think when we wrapped that, whatever time it was, like 3-4 in the morning, whatever it was, that was the last scene, was wrap. And I remember walking back with Tom and he, like, we were chatting, and I just thought, this is amazing. You know, I don't care that I'm only a small role. I just hope I don't meet the cutting room floor. That's the only fear you have, because you go, but I like to think that it was such a significant moment to kind of go, they're going in the wrong direction. What are we now kind of, for want of a better word, what have we got ourselves in for? What's really the severity of this situation? So I always had hope that it would be in some capacity, but actually was in its entirety. I think I said to you off camera was that I remember when it was aired in England, and then the next episode I was at a pub with some mates, and basically I was going to race back, and someone went, hey, you're on it again, and I thought, what bit's that? And then I realized it was the trailer. So that was the thing. But for a split second I thought, what else did I film? Did I film something else? Did I film a
That's really funny. That was the previously on Band of Brothers.
The previous Band of Brothers, it was exactly that, yeah. So there we go. Yeah. So that's how it came about. And I remember I received a crew jacket and a letter from Tom Hanks, which stands pride of place, which, yeah, honestly, it's one of those moments that, you know, wherever my career goes from here on in, I'll never forget that. And to be part of it, you know. And it was interesting because I became friends. We've lost touch now, just, you know, through circumstance and moving and stuff, with Tim Matthews, who was also in Band of Brothers. And we did a job together. We did, actually, Gary Davey cast that as well, which was a BBC drama documentary of Hiroshima. And I played Van Kirk, the navigator of the Enola Gay, which Colonel Tibbetts is obviously the pilot. And we filmed that for, I think, gosh, was that like 30 days or something? And we spent a lot of time together. And we were talking a lot. And he was telling me a lot about his Band of Brothers experience and how, yeah, for him, like, he'd done several different TV jobs and what have you. But for him, it was a seminal piece of work as well. So,
right. He played Alex Pinkala.
Right. There you go. And I would say, without question, it's such a roll call of actors. We have an actors directory called Spotlight. I don't know if you're aware of this or not, but in England, this is what basically you all are in. Now it's digital, but it used to be a series of books. So A to D, E to G, and so on, right until the end of the alphabet. And then you would basically have like a little kind of four pictures of whoever the actors are. And I remember thinking, this is like Spotlight come alive. Like there's like everyone and anyone that's having differing roles in it, like James McAvoy, Tom Hardy, Simon Pegg, Dexter Fletcher. I mean, to reel off just a few. Michael Fassbender, of course. Yeah, exactly. So yeah, you know, I think for me was just, I'd already won when I was getting seen for it, because I remember it was so, all young actors were just like, you got to get seen for it. You got to be somehow considered for this. So, yeah, I suppose if I'm absolutely honest, maybe tinged with a little bit of what could have been with some of the other roles. But hey, look, man, you take what is, what goes for you isn't meant for you, etc. Or what doesn't go for you isn't meant for you. I think that's the actual phrase.
Right.
So yeah, it's all good.
Sure. Sure. Wow, that is so cool. Thank you very much for sharing that experience with us.
Pleasure.
Yeah, very cool. Okay, so Garnier grabs Lee and says, hey pal, what happened? Where the hell are you going? And do you remember your line? Or should I read it to you?
I think I might. They came out of nowhere. They slaughtered us. You got to get out of here.
That's right. That's right.
Take it. Yeah, exactly. I think that's right.
That's exactly what you said.
And you know why I know that, Rob? Is because for weeks, if not months afterwards, anyone that sort of was like a secondary friend would quote these lines to me.
Hey, well, yeah, after 25 years, if you can remember that, that's pretty good.
Exactly. Dine on it on a regular basis.
And was it difficult for you to do the American accent?
I like to think not, actually. And that's, I mean, you'll tell me.
Well, right now, when you said it, you also said it in an American accent. I don't know if you did that on purpose or not, but you did.
Yeah, I mean, I think one of my skill sets is I have quite a good ear for dialect. So I've invariably, if anyone goes and watches anything that I've been in, you'll hear me talk now and you'll go, that's not his accent in pretty much everything I've done. Mm-hmm. And I think that's because of where I was brought up, where I went to school, and subsequently I've lived in London now for over 20 plus years. So there's probably a hybrid of different accents within the way that I speak, which doesn't necessarily lend itself to many, you know, dramas or productions. I don't know where you would place me. Maybe the Midlands, maybe Middle England, maybe. I don't know. I guess I'll leave that to listeners to think if they or whether they sound like a neutral Brit. I don't know. Maybe I do.
To me, you Brits all sound alike.
Of course. Of course.
Yeah. And then Babe says, we just got here. And Garnier, thinking pretty quickly, says to him, give me your ammo. Come on. And then what does Lee say to him?
Here, take it. You'll need it, I
That's
think.
Right.
Isn't it?
Yes, it does. That's what he says.
And then I go.
And then you just leave. And the Babe goes, go on, get out of here.
Yeah.
Holy Christ. So, I mean, they realize, you know, that these guys are traumatized by what they just went through, and this is where we're going in. You know, and they're not really sure how to deal with it, but what they decide is that they got to get as much ammo as possible. So they go, who's got ammo? And they start moving through the lines, asking people, got ammo? Hold on, give me your ammo. What do you got, kid? And he goes, you got any grenades? Hand them over. And then he goes to another guy, you got grenades? Thanks, buddy. Got any grenades? Who's got grenades? And then he goes, private, what do you got? And, you know, they're scrounging around, doing what they can to take whatever ammunition is no longer needed by these other guys. And, you know, the other guys of Easy Company realize this also. And, you know, we can see Joe Toy getting stuff, Liebgott's getting stuff. You know, they're going man by man, trying to get as many as possible, trying to get as much ammo from any of them. And then you hear in the background. Now, actually, I'm going to ask a question before we get to this. I mean, you mentioned before that you did like a four day boot camp, and you know, I'm trying to figure out why they needed you to do a 4 day boot camp if your scene is walking back from battle as opposed to being you're not in actual, you know, a battle role or anything. Did they explain to you why they felt that it was necessary for you to still go through that?
No, I just got the impression it was just universal. Anyone that was involved in it, that's what you did. And obviously, they did it quite extensively. We only did it for a couple of days, as I say. I don't think it was it 4 days? I don't think it was as many as 4 days, maybe 2 days. But it was. I really strongly suspect, I can't remember if maybe the first, I think maybe it was one of the things was to handle a weapon. So I think maybe at one point, they were going to give me a rifle, I think.
Okay.
Again, I'm trying. Because
again, your character just basically gives over his ammo. That's as close as he gets to showing any type of battle here or any fighting.
Yeah. You know, actually, now I remember, because the props gave me a helmet as well, and then Tom said, "You're doing some lovely stuff. The helmet is obscuring that. Let's get rid of the helmet." I remember. So. Maybe it was the same thing with the rifle. Maybe they just thought that was it's not necessary, or in actual fact it's more that there's a broken individual that's just got some ammo that, you know, he's more like I honestly think, because I remember the one guy, as I said, the older actor that was doing the boot camp as well. I mean, I don't know who he is in the episode. I can't remember him really as a, I mean, there's only one, I don't think it was him, I don't know, anyway, but yeah, I got the feeling that you, maybe it's just a badge of honor as a way that you just did it, you were just maybe they, when you come in and do such a day player, we're going to call them a supporting role, you come in and basically they just, that's immediately part of the program. And then, you know, fine, if you're in a battle scene, you're prepped, you know how to, you know, you know roughly if someone gives you ammunition or gives you a weapon or whatever it might be, that you have some basic training of what that would be. You're crawling on the floor, you know roughly what that would be. Because I remember that. I remember we were crawling along the floor under nets and stuff. And, you know, you could say it felt quite detailed for something that doesn't get reflected on camera, but maybe they just wanted you to experience it so you have it like in the back of your mind.
Okay.
But I don't know.
Okay, no, because I'm also thinking of it from a financial perspective. You know, that on the one hand, you know, I mean, I know we talked about before that HBO had tons of money at the time, so it didn't really matter. You know, let's spend whatever we can. But, you know, to quote unquote waste the number of days that you know, in paying for that in order to have actors that don't have any battle scenes go through this, you know, on the one hand could seem like a waste, but on the other hand, as you said, it makes it seem, you know, maybe they already knew they had you know, Dale Dye and his guys for X number of days, and you know, we might as well just have these actors go through it so yeah. that they have somewhat of an experience. They know what they can relate more to their characters that way.
Yeah. I'm grateful for it
because I'm not against it. I'm not trying to say that you know, HBO should have saved money and not sent Lee to go to his boot camp. No, what I'm saying is that I'm trying to think of a logical explanation.
No, I think you bring up a very valid question. I think anyone would say, probably say the same. I'm not even sure I've relayed that information to many people. Perhaps it just, you know, something that I did. I remember when I was filming at the time, I think I wasn't allowed to say very much. So maybe I didn't tell anyone really at the time anyway about it. So, yeah, as I say, what you're asking, I think you're absolutely justified in asking. I think, you know, looking back, you'd probably say, yeah, that was expenditure that probably wasn't required at that time for those roles.
Right. But again, it does go back to what I said, that it is possible that, you know, they already had them there. So they're like, all right, might as well just give these guys the experience.
Do you know what? Now, I mean, this, we're really thinking of my memories, but do you know what? I really think this, the boy that played the French boy in the episode, I have a feeling he did it as well. I have feeling he did. I don't know. Maybe it was part of the experience. I have a feeling he did. I have a feeling he was with us.
Interesting.
Because he wasn't, I mean, it wasn't a lot younger than me, I don't think, at the time. So it wasn't like, you know, he's a boy that he shouldn't be, you know, put through the same sort of endurance. I think he was. You'll have to get him on the podcast and ask him.
If you can tell me who he is and you know how to get in touch with him, I will gladly do so.
You know, I don't know him. I mean, other than when I obviously was on set and I didn't have any scenes with him, clearly. So I don't think we were only in terms of arrival, doing the boot camp. That's why I wouldn't have remembered him otherwise. So that's why I think he did do it. Because I definitely, where my trailer was not, I don't remember seeing him. Because obviously I was on a night shoot. So I wouldn't have seen him. And even when I was there, you go obviously earlier in the day before you film. I was pretty much in my trailer, sort of like, I think either I was having some, watching something that was being filmed, or I was having a consultation with Joe McCullough, the dialect coach, or maybe I was eating. So yeah, I don't remember seeing him in any other capacity. So I'm thinking I think he must have done it. So yeah, so that in itself poses questions, right? So therein lies more questions than answers.
Well, yeah. Okay. Very cool. All right. And then so thank you very much for indulging me with that response.
Yeah, you're welcome.
So then we see that you know, the men are being parted out of the way, moved out of the way by a jeep that's coming, and we see that someone screams, "Make a hole, make a hole, make a hole! I got ammo. Grab what you can." And we see that it's the guy that you were jamming with, Jimmy Fallon.
It was
Jimmy Fallon shows up. He plays Lieutenant George Rice. And Winters then sees him and goes, "Lieutenant, you're a godsend. What's the situation?" He goes, "Well, I heard you guys were coming in. There was an ammo dump. So here, is it just you guys in the 101st? Looks like it. What hit you fellows? Everything. The Krauts had Tigers, Panthers, SPSs, Stukas, already in infantry. Just kept them coming. What's your name, Lieutenant?" "George Rice, 10th Armor." "Good work, son." You got any more mortar rounds, sir? We're real short. I'll try to make another ammo run if I can, but don't count on anything. Thank you, sir. I'll take this. And then Rice goes, Panzer Division is about to cut the road south. Looks like you guys are going to be surrounded. We're paratroopers, Lieutenant. We're supposed to be surrounded. Good luck. Thanks. And then he drives off. Now, again, I love, first of all, I remember when I first watched this, how I was shocked. I knew who Jimmy Fallon was at the time. And it was just, it was great just having him in this small little part, just showing up and helping out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was a good job.
Especially since, there's no real need to have a known face in that role. It could have been anybody, But I do like the way that they do that. And it's just very, very cool. Now, I did a little bit of research on George C. Rice. So he was a supply officer in the 10th Armored Division. And he is best known for his critical actions during the Battle of the Bulge. So he completed 9 separate supply runs in his Jeep, sometimes on a truck, in order to deliver grenades, 30 caliber ammunition, and mortar rounds to the paratroopers. His final runs were made after the 101st was already completely encircled by German forces, which required him to drive through enemy lines to reach the soldiers and return. He was preparing to make a 10th run when he was ordered to stand down for his own safety. And he was awarded a Bronze Star for what he did and was also nominated for the Medal of Honor, but didn't get it. And he survived the war and returned to his home in Illinois. And apparently he lived a full life after the conflict, which is great also. And then after Rice leaves, and these guys all took the ammo from him, we just see a shot of a whole bunch of the men just walking, I guess, into danger, I guess you can sort of say. And I like how they're, I do like how this is set up, because they are all equidistantly spaced from one another, showing us that they're not all clumped together, with the way that that this all goes. And we see them just walking down the road into Bastogne. And as always, the music is amazing here. They do a great job of how that happens. The camera zooms in on Winter's face as he watches his men moving into Bastogne, realizing that this is not going to be easy at all. And then we see Garnier, we see Liebgott, then we see Cobb, smoking on his way, and we see Joe Toy. In a way, it goes back to what we were talking about yesterday with the fact that Winters cares about these men. So we see his the way he looks at all of them and how he's connected to them. And I'm sure that what's supposed to be going through his mind right now is how many of these men are going to be going home at the end of this. Because of how dangerous a mission they're being sent into. Then Winters joins the men as he starts walking with them. As they walk in files on their way into Bastogne. And then the screen fades, we get a note on the screen that says Easy Company moved into the woods near Bastogne without any artillery or air support. It was short of food, ammunition, and lacked winter clothing. It continues and gives us a blank screen telling us that that's it. This is what we're going to have to deal with in the next episode or the next part of this miniseries, which, again, we've now reached the midway point of this miniseries because of the fact that we finished 5 episodes and now we're going to be starting the second half of it. So it's nicely cut from that perspective. Now, I want to apologize to you, Lee, that you didn't get a full 5 minutes here because you only got 3 minutes and 40 seconds approximately.
long?
Seriously. But whatever, it's still not the regular minute by minute. So what can I say? It's closer to that.
There you go. Perfect. Exactly.
Excellent. Okay, so Lee, is there anything else you want to say about Band of Brothers, about watching it, about experiencing it, or about this particular 3 minutes and 40 seconds.
I've had 3 minutes of no other than, you know, kind of what I've said really, that I just remember just being in something so visceral at that time, and like the way they dressed the set was just so incredible. And I think to be on a production which is so immense in size, and yet feel for the small part that I was involved in, that you are so personable in your kind of interaction with the, I mean, again, I've done stuff where the director is, I would say, you know, no doubt about it, will come up to you and kind of give you an outline, but then you're dealing largely with the first AD. Whereas Tom was really, and maybe this is because he's an actor, he was like, wanted to ensure that I was in a place where, you know, I was totally happy with what I was doing. I knew where like all the beats were. And again, it feels so strange to say that when you say so little. But as I said, I think he understood as much as any actor. One of the things I think we always fear is when you've got, it's much harder, I think, from my personal point of view, to say very little than it is to say a lot, because you're so self-conscious of going, right, I've got these lines coming up. I've got these lines coming up. Okay, I need to now just immerse myself and those lines will just come out. Whereas if you're doing two or three exchanges with a bit more dialogue, it's naturally more relaxed because you're listening and you're basically then reacting, and then you've got the next thing to say. So I cannot have further praise for my experience on it. And, you know, that from a, you know, from a personal selfish point of view, but just to, for me, that episode is so symbolic in the sense that, of you at the crossroads of the seven roads leading in, seven roads lead out. But it also feels like it's a crossroads for this mm-hmm. company of men and exactly. for Winters as well. So it works on very all fronts.
Excellent. All right. So today's segment is Oh Brother. My guest will give their top five movie brothers. So Lee, why don't you start with your number five and work your way up?
It's not World War II trivia. Is it not that
would you like me to go back? Can do that again if you really want.
Don't think either of us could go through the pain of that again, could we? We wouldn't put the listeners through it. It wouldn't be fair.
Well, let's make a deal. We'll revisit it, you and I, in about a year from now, when after you've watched a whole bunch of more World War II movies. How's that? Does that sound fair?
That sounds like a very, very good idea. Perfect. Great.
All right. We will be doing Oh Brother today. So why don't you start with your number five and work your way up?
Okay. So first of all, I want to caveat this, because when you basically presented this to me as a section in this podcast, I started getting really creative and I thought, is there films where they encompass both the brother and the band? And I actually found two. So one, my number five is a film called Brothers of the Head, which you may not have heard of or even seen. It's a mockumentary, a British mockumentary, in which these adjoining twins basically are kind of like coerced, I suppose the word, into being a rock band. So you've got the brothers, these twin brothers, and you've got the fact that they're also in a band. So that's my number five, works on both fronts. I thought I'd quite proud of that.
Okay, I gotta say, not only have I never seen it, I've never heard of it. Is it worth seeking out?
I think it's based on a book, if I remember rightly. It's perfectly 3 out of 5 star kind of movie, I would say. I would say don't go like searching for it, but if it comes your way, check it out. I think it's got its merits. But it was more to do with the fact that I remember seeing it and it just was like, oh gosh, that's one where it basically has both of those elements. So yeah, that's why I mentioned it. And the same, this isn't in my top five because I mentioned it previously, but I'm going to mention The Fabulous Baker Boys, which obviously again encompasses both. They are obviously a band, but they're also brothers. So there you go. There's two of those. And I will allow the listeners to see if they can seek out any others.
Well, obviously the Blues Brothers fits in there too.
Oh, yeah, the Blues Brothers, of course. There you go, straight off the bat. So, yeah, there are probably many, many, many. Okay, so now my next selections are really ones that I've gone very sort of, how can I put it? Not highbrow movies, it's fair to say. But I always remember those brothers having an impact on me in different ways. So
always.
Are you ready for my number four? Double Impact, the absolute juggernaut of a movie that playing features Jean-Claude Van Damme. Not once.
Yes, of course.
Yeah, you seen it? Oh, the film is magic for all of the reasons. You get not one Jean-Claude Van Damme, you get two Jean-Claude Van Dammes. And I I've probably seen that movie as much as I've seen the likes of The Godfather and Heat and The Conversation, all brilliant movies, because I find it so enjoyable. So yeah, a big salute to Jean-Claude Van Damme and his sibling performance. And then it's not quite in the same vein, but I would probably say, again, it's not of highest art, is Twins, with the mighty Arnold Schwarzenegger and Danny DeVito brother combination, which again is very much part of my childhood. I remember watching that movie in the cinema, actually, and enjoying it immensely.
That's great.
Then I've gone for Rain Man with Dustin Hoffman and Tom Cruise. That film, I remember watching it at the time and really being probably realizing that Tom Cruise wasn't just a kind of Hollywood star. I was like, this guy is really doing some stuff in this movie, obviously playing one of the greatest screen actors in Dustin Hoffman, and really holding his own and doing some really, really lovely work. And I think that film is really beautiful at times. I really like it.
And you're number one.
My number one, and this is because it's one of my favourite movies of all time, and it's The Lost Boys because of the Frog Brothers, who are the vampire hunters. Corey Feldman, exactly. Absolute movie magic for me. Oh, well, so, yeah.
That is a great choice. Very nice. All right. And now, as I'm sure you were dreading, we will now play the daily game of Name That World War II Movie.
Yes, bring it on. Let's
spin the wheel and see if Lee gets something that he knows. Hopefully.
Maybe we should rephrase it as spin the wheel and see what other films Lee doesn't know. No. That's probably
okay, there is a chance that you know this one. Okay. This is a movie that came out in 2008, and it stars Daniel Craig, Liev Schreiber, and Jamie Bell, and it's about a group of brothers in German-occupied East Europe that join the forces of the partisans in order to try and fight against the Germans.
Jamie Bell, Daniel Craig. Why do I feel like I've seen this?
Daniel movie? Craig, Liev Schreiber.
Who else did you Jamie say was Bell.
I'm trying to see if there's anybody else here who is familiar. I don't see any other names that really jump out.
Oh, no. This is another one that's got me. And
it was directed by Edward Zwick, if that helps at all.
That doesn't help at all, but is the roll call of, is the Jamie and Bell, Daniel Craig.
They do play three brothers.
That I'm thinking is the one that's...
Again, randomly came out on this day when we dealt with old brother, but yes.
Is it on my list?
Don't think it was, if I remember.
Can you give me the first letter of D. the movie? Let's see.
D.
Defiance.
Very good. Excellent. Okay. What was it on your list? Was that on your list?
It was on my list. It's on there with a movie which one did I put with that? Because I remember, because the Thin Red Line, I know it's, for some reason, there are two movies that I kind of watched near each other. I think Thin Red Line is one of my favorite war movies, actually.
Mm. Okay, very nice. All right.
Yeah.
Very good. So, Lee, would you like once again to tell people where they can find Lee Colley when not watching you in Band of Brothers or in the previously on, you know, in the next episode?
Okay, so I think we're treading on very familiar ground. I am not a social media savvy person. You can find me in the Twitter sphere, but I would say, if you really want to kind of just see what I'm about and see, you know, I do sometimes say a few more lines than that. If you go on my IMDb page, you can seek out some stuff that I've done. I think some stuff is on Netflix, some stuff is on Disney Plus, some stuff is on other streaming platforms. So you can see, yeah, maybe try and see what other accents I portray, and if I do it a convincing job, as I like to think that I've done in Band of Brothers.
Yeah. Okay. Fair enough. And finding me is very similar to a quick search for Movie Rob Minute. You can find me on my website, movierobminute.com. You can send me an email to rob@movierob.net. If you want to send me, if you want to contact me on Twitter, on Instagram, or Facebook, I'm also on all three of those socials. So, Lee, thank you very much once again for joining me and for being a good sport. That's always important with these type of things.
It's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for
telling me about your experiences. That's also very important. So I'm very happy to hear about your experiences in.
Please, I could contribute something that perhaps you hadn't perhaps ventured into before on your fantastic podcast. So, yeah, honestly,
I've had interviews with some of the actors, but not someone who has a part like you. So there you go.
Okay. All right, there we go.
Excellent. All right. All right, so I'll be back. Everyone have a great weekend. I'll be back on Monday with a new guest. But until then, Kurahi!
Kurahi!